got the hammer. Okay, good. Tchiyas HaMeitim. So, like I said just now, Tchiyas HaMeitim is the bringing life to the dead. So the question is, what does that mean? Normally we think of it as meaning people who have been dead and are buried will somehow come back to life. And I don't know if we have an exactly like an image of this, whether you think of some kind of zombie invasion or whatever. We'll talk a little bit more about maybe whether we can understand how this is. But it seems to be a very important part of Judaism. It's one of the Rambam's 13 principles of faith. That's pretty big. There are lots of things that didn't get onto that list. For example, free choice, freedom of choice, didn't get onto that list. There are other things that didn't get onto the list, but Tchiyas HaMeitim did. And we'll see by what he writes in a minute, he considers Tchiyas HaMeitim to be perhaps the most fundamental principle of all of the principles. There's no Judaism without it. And the question is like, well, really? I mean, it's very interesting and maybe important, but like, is that like central? If I were to tell you that actually Judaism doesn't believe that people who are long dead will come back to life, would it change your religious life in any material way? Probably not. So what does the Rambam mean by this? Yael?
I feel like trees are the perfect example.
Trees?
Yeah, like nature. Like right. You see, like, in the winter, like, a tree has nothing on it, like, no leaves, and then, like, it's
yes.
Like a form of tree is made.
Yes, that actually is a very beautiful idea. We see ideas in nature of things that appear to be dead, or even are actually, on some level, clinically dead. Babies, when they're born, and they go from being in the womb to switching into sort of an oxygen-breathing mentality. They basically die in terms of their prior function and are then reincarnated in some kind of way. Not in the classic sense, but yes, it really so. I remember I heard once Rabbi Akiva Tatz, spoke at length about this. He's a doctor as well, and he was giving all the medical, you know, aspects into which a baby basically died. There was actually, I'll come to you in a second, Nechama, there was a book written by Rav Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky about 50, 60 years ago called Gesher HaChaim, which is all the laws of mourning and death, etc. And he has a beautiful introduction in that book. And he gives a parable of two babies, twins in the womb together. And they have this life together and they've only ever known each other and they sense each other, maybe even see each other, maybe eyes open in the womb. And then at a certain point, suddenly there's a sort of a gaping chasm opens up underneath one of them. And one of them kind of descends down into this hole that this is out of all sight, and all the other one can hear is screaming and crying, and he's like, oh my gosh, now my brother's just died, etc. And this is a disaster. And of course, you and I know that this is a Mazel Tov moment at the other side of the birth, but for the baby, so he has that kind of moshel, which is a very powerful moshel. You said you remember this?
I'm a twin. It took me 27 minutes to be born after my sister, because I was like, that seems pretty bad out there.
Right, really? Wow. Wow. 27 minutes. Yeah. I'm not moving.
Yeah, it is natural birth.
Right, wow.
Well, with epidural, but yeah.
Okay, wow. Candora? Actually, Nechama, sorry?
I was just wondering, could it have been that his strong stance on this was partly a reaction to the Sadducees?
Probably not. Certainly not to the Sadducees, because don't forget the Sadducees, the Tzedukim, they were all gone by the second century. What people often say is the word Sadducees is the Karaites. The Karaites had a, not exactly the same in terms of their approach to life, but there were certain overlaps. So sometimes they call the Karaites the Tzedukim. Now, the Karaites were big when the Rambam was there. I don't actually know what the Karaites say about the resurrection of the dead. There were many other issues on which we had bigger fish to fry with the Karaites, and the Rambam had to deal with that a lot. I don't know if this is relevant. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. You can do some homework. I don't think so, but I might be wrong. But we'll see in a minute where the Rambam gets himself into some hot water and how he gets himself out of it, or maybe. So let's have a look at some of the sources. Number one, let's see what the Torah and the Tanakh says about this issue. Ra'u ata, this is Ha'azinu, which is my bar mitzvah parsha, so I have a little bit of a, you know, connection with it. Look, he says the parsha of Ha'azinu is Moshe Rabbeinu's song that he teaches the Jewish people in order to how to understand history and life. Meaning it's not like the Shirat Hayam, the song of the sea that they sang when they came out of the Red Sea, was a spontaneous song of joy and jubilation, and the Jewish people sang that, which is actually a fascinating structure of the song as well, which is not for now. Ha'azinu, which is at the end of the Torah, was never sung by anybody at the time. It's as much as it says, I'm going to teach you a song. If you keep teaching your kids and your grandchildren this song, they will get Jewish history. and they will not make the mistakes the Jews make in Jewish history. It's actually a really interesting song. So one of the things it says is, Ru'u ata, look now, see now, says God, ki ani, ani hu, I am the one, the ein Elohim imadi, there is no other God beside me, ani amit, I cause to die, the achaye, and I bring to life, machatzti v'ani yipeh, I crush, and I heal, the ein miyadi matzil, and there's no one else other than me. Now, on a pshat level, that doesn't mean people are going to come back to life. It means that I decide who lives and I decide who dies, and you know, you don't control the world. And that's what the pshat means. But on a drash level, this was pointed to and said, look, ani amit, I kill, the achaye, and then bring back to life. Maybe that is a hint on some level to Tchiyat HaMetim. Yes.
You said that Moshe sang this song to the nation to yes. say, like, this is how, yes. teach this to your kids and we'll yes. remember.
Jewish history. You'll know how to navigate through Jewish history. It's a brilliant song. And there are kids who learn it off by heart in school. It's like a really important part of Jewish Masorah. Fine, okay, good. However, we don't need hints because we have explicit mentions as we get to Daniel in a minute. So in Kohelet, we talk about life after death, not Tchiyas HaMesim, probably. Number two, V'yasa ma'apar ala aretz. The dirt, the dust goes down to the ground, to Shehaya, where it came from. The haruach and the spirit of a person, Teshuva Elokim, goes back to God Hashem Netanya, which gave it. Good, so the body and the soul separating. But we'll look soon at whether they need to come back together again. We'll see how that works. Number three, Daniel. Now, Daniel is very apocalyptic, very focused on the end of days and the eschatological vision. So look at what he says. V'rabim yishene admat afar. Many of those who lie in the dust, that's dead people, okay? Yakitsu, they will awake. It's explicit. People who are dead will come back to life. Eilu l'chai olam, some of them to eternal life. V'eilu l'charafot lidiru on olam, and some to eternal shame. Okay? So what's going on here? Daniel is saying that people will come back to life and there'll be some kind of judgment. Some ultimate judgment where the body and the soul is back together again. So again, I'm just setting out the parameters and then we'll see what the Rambam has to say. The Mishnah, where it picks up on this, and this is important for you to know because all of this discussion of the 13 principles of faith takes place around the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. We talked about this earlier in the year. We've been going through this course the whole year, where the Mishnah turns around and says, the following Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelik L'Om Haba, all Jewish people have a place in the world to come. By the way, non-Jewish people as well, that's a separate issue, I'm not getting into that now. But, these are the people who lose their place in the world to come. They do not have a place in the world to come. So let's look at what that says. Kol Yisrael, number four, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelik L'Om Haba. Every Jew has a place in the world to come. Shnei Amar brings a posuk in Yishayahu, Va'amech Kulam Tzadikim Le'olam Yirshu Aretz. Your people are all Tzadikim. They will eternally inherit the land. And the land, the Aretz, is always like the land, the world to come. By the way, this Perik in Yeshayahu is relevant to my family now. I never taught this when it was before, because I now have a granddaughter who is named after this Perik in Yeshayahu. Which was quite I'm not as big on Isaiah, please come in, as my son is. I should be, but he's much more advanced than me. And they called their little girl Naharitzion, which is a very unusual name in my book, but that, nevertheless. And even in my shul, which is pretty Tanakh-oriented, like a lot of Tanakh teachers, they call the baby Naharitzion, and like 85% of the shul went like, and 15% of the shul went, Yeshayahu Perek Samach, wow! Like everyone's like really excited, all Tanakh professors. So if you read that Perek, you'll see that it's all happening there, and it's all about the vision of the future people shining and bright and flowing. And anyway, fine. It's a big name for a little girl, but she'll grow into it. Okay, Va'amei Kulam Tzadikim Lam Yishu Aretz. Okay, Ve'elu She'ein Lahem Chelek Lam Haba. These are the Jews who do not have a place in the world to come. And there is a few categories, and one of them is Ha'omer, someone who says Ein Tchiyat HaMeitim Min HaTorah, that the Torah does not agree with Tchiyat HaMeitim, or maybe that there's no reference to Tchiyat HaMeitim in the Torah, but that the principle of Tchiyat HaMeitim is not there. Who's the place in Olam Haba? So it sounds pretty important. What are the other two groups? Do you know? One group is a group of people who don't believe the Torah is Min HaShamayim. They don't believe the Torah comes from heaven in some way. And the third group is someone who's an apikoros. What's an apikoros? A heretic. So The whole of the Rambam, this is a bit of a recap for those who have been here for the year, but the Rambam's 13 principles of faith themselves, all 13, are divided into these three categories. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are all people who are apikorsim, who are heretics in some way. Number one is the mitzvah, the requirement to believe in God, that God exists. Number two is that God is one. Number three is that God has no physical form. Number four is that God is beyond time. And number five is that we only pray directly to God. You don't have to write these down now. You can just look in your siddur. They're all there in the siddur. So that's the first five, which is like people who have a messed up understanding of God. That's the apikoros. 6, 7, 8, and 9 are all to do with Torah, where Torah comes from. 6 is that there is such a thing as prophecy and God speaks to the human race. 7 is that Moshe had a special prophecy. We've covered these earlier in the year. 8 is that Torah is from heaven. We'll talk more about that when we talk about the oral law class in a couple of weeks. And 9 is that the Torah will never change, which we saw the Rambam talks about that in his view of Mashiach. 10, 11, 12, and 13 are all about how God runs the world and reward and punishment. 10 is that God knows all things. 12, 11 is that God rewards and punishes. 12 is Mashiach, and 13 is Tchitzalit. Now you've had like a really brief overview of all 13. So the Rambam picks up on this and talks about it in a minute. We'll see how that works. Maybe look at the Rambam in number 6 now. The Rambam later rules, the Rambam is summarizing all of these halachot he's getting from the Mishnah here. These are the people who have no place in the world to come. Ela nichratim va'ovdim v'nidonim agodel risham v'chatasam la'olam uliyomei olamin. Which is very interesting, that they are cut off, they're judged, they are constantly judged for their wickedness forever and ever and ever and ever. This is like an interesting question. What does that mean, constantly judged? It means, seems to be that they're still there, but there's like not in a good place. As opposed to someone who is chayiv kares. People sometimes talk about chayiv kares. Yeah, chayiv kares, there are 36 mitzvahs, prohibitions in the Torah, very rare ones for which a person's chayiv kares. So what is that? So the Rambam says, that is simply that a person just doesn't exist in the next world. They don't exist. They're like an animal, in the sense that an animal doesn't have a soul, or he doesn't have a soul that, like human soul, doesn't have a spiritual reality in the next world. So too, someone who does one of these 36 mitzvahs, or averas, on purpose, and knowing what they're doing, and having been warned, I mean, you can't be chayv kares by mistake. Yeah? And this is nothing to do with today's shir, but I will mention it, because I think you have to mention it. For some reason, people who go to religious high schools, usually women, actually, I don't know why, maybe it's just because I teach women, maybe men are taught this as well, somehow pick up along the way this idea that if a person does an Avera, which is Chayiv Kares, they can never do Tshuva. This is complete nonsense. Total and utter fake news. There is no such thing as an Avera from which a person can't do Tshuva. And I don't know why, but this is perpetuated as a myth again and again and again. Now, most of the things that Chayiv Kares of the 36 that you'd never do in a million years, they're things like sleep with your siblings and your, you know, a parent and a child and murder and like those things that you're just not even going to get involved in. So of the 36, probably 25 of them, you're just like, fine, you know, something that's not my problem, I hope. Okay, there's a few of them that are more relevant, like breaking Shabbos, but again, it's on purpose, having been warned, knowing Hilchos Shabbos, and blah, 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 eating chametz on Pesach, okay? But these are things which sounds like you just don't exist in the world to come. Whereas these things, it sounds like you do exist, but it's bad news for a long time, okay? They've lost some kind of connection with God in the world to come. By the way, you should just know that the Rambam even rules that if a person breaks Shabbos, knowing that they're breaking Shabbos, knowing the laws of Shabbos, having been warned by someone right there and then, you know this is going to be breaking Shabbos if you do this, and respond, I don't care, and then they break it, they are still not Chayiv Kares, unless they know that that really is Chayiv Kares. If they think it's just prohibited in the Torah, but don't realize how serious it is, then that itself, they're not considered to have done it on purpose. So it's actually quite hard to do an Avera really super duper on purpose. Okay? All the people out there that you know that don't keep Shabbos, they certainly don't break Shabbos. They may not keep Shabbos, but they certainly don't break Shabbos. Okay? Which is an interesting thing. So you're not going out there to do outreach to save people's souls. So you don't worry about their souls. Their souls are probably great. Yeah, yeah. It's all the front people that you've got to worry about, because they're all the people that are breaking stuff, you know? So it's an interesting question how that works. We once had a funny situation where many years ago at MRC, where the women decided to do the 39 malachas for Purim. They had, I can't believe we had 39 students, but maybe we had 39 students. They were all going to be the 39 malachas for Shabbos. And this one's Bora and this one's Bishon. It was all really cute. So they came up to me and said to me, I wasn't running the school, they said, like, we've got a problem, we're three short, we're only 36, what are we going to do? We can't do the 39 malachas. So I said to you, why don't you do the 36 different ways you can be chayv kares for Purim? They said, like, what? Give me some examples. Well, you got like incest and like murder. And like, so they said, you know what? We'll just miss out a couple of malachas.
So anyway, people can be double
cast. And that's British humour, yes.
So it's really better not to warn someone who knows they're not going to.
That's for sure. Yeah. Depending on what the action is, I mean, we pass them that if it's explicit in the Torah and they're like, you know, they're about to murder someone or whatever, you absolutely have to. But if it's something that's not so clear and they don't know what they're doing, and they got definitely not. Yes.
I thought for sure you were going to say that you and a couple other teachers would volunteer to make
it. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm going to be, you know, straight back to fine. Fine. No. We weren't that progressive in those days. Okay, fine. So he says here, and who are they? And he includes number six, second line, Hakoyfrim. But Tchias HaMesim or Bevias Goel, people who deny Tchias HaMesim and the coming of the Mashiach. Fine. We'll come back to number five in a minute, but let's just go on a little bit. So when the Rambam gets to Tchias HaMesim in his analysis, look what he says. Number seven. HaYisod HaShlosh Asar. Yisod number 13. Principle number 13. Tchias HaMesim. Oh, here's going to be the big explanation. He says, Kfar Be'arno. We've already said enough on this. Right. Okay, that was a bit of a letdown. So where did he say? And by the way, some of the 13 principles he speaks of pages and pages. Torah min haShamayim, pages. This one, like, we already said enough what we said on this. Yeah. So let's go back to where he talks about earlier on. Because what the Rambam does in the, this is where he sets out the... sorry, this is in my throat. This is where he sets out the 13 principles. And what he does is he analyzes this Mishnah. This is part of his line-by-line commentary on the Mishnah, which is much, much bigger than this. Obviously, it's the whole Mishnah. We'll talk about what the Mishnah is when we do the Oral Law class. And when he gets to this particular Mishnah, which says, oh, every Jew has a place in the world to come and these people do not, he says, I can't just give you a line-by-line commentary on this. I need a whole introduction. And this is where he sets out all his ideas about this world, the next world, and what is life, what is death, what are the 13 principles. And this is taken from that. Number eight, he says, Tchias HaMesim, Yisod mi yisodot Torat Moshe. This is the principle of principles of the Torah of Moshe. And then he says, Ein dat. There is no religion. Velo dveikut bedat. And there is no connection with our religion. But dat yudit, with the Jewish religion. Lemishelo ya'aminza. To someone who doesn't believe this. So again, think about that. Really, there's no religion. And there's no connection with religion unless you believe that people are coming out of their graves and coming back to life. Like, I would have said, like, no, actually, if I was going to drop anything, which I'm not going to drop, but, like, this is something you could actually quite easily have dropped, and it would not have affected the root of religion. Okay? So that's already a bit strange. And then he talks about who it's for, tzaddikim, not rishayim, etc., etc. All of this drew people to conclude that when the Rambam says Tchias HaMesim, he means life after death. Not the resurrection of the dead. If I were to tell you that we don't believe in life after death, when people die, they just, you know, put in the ground and that's the end of everything that they ever had. There's no next world. Now, that would be something which goes to the root of everything that people, if I stood up and said that, that would be, you know, but Tchias HaMesim, like people coming out of the grave. So people said to him, look, we don't think that this is what you mean. We think that you're talking about something else. And he got a little bit pushed back. I got a bit of pushback on this. Also in the Moreh Nevuchim, he doesn't really talk about it at all. So we have to work out what the Rambam really thought. Now, there are really strong sources that seems to say that, in fact, Tchias HaMesim has to be people coming back to life. I want to look at number 9 with you, because this is very important. It's in the Gemara. It's in Sanhedrin. It's exactly where all of these sugyas are about the next world. And it says as follows. Amar Le Antoninus Le Rebbe. So this is a famous duo, pairs, two good friends. One was Jewish, one was not Jewish. Who was Antoninus? He was a philosopher, he was a Roman emperor. We think he was Marcus Aurelius Antoninus, okay? Who lived around the time of Rebbe. Who was Rebbe? Well, we just say Rebbe, the Rav. Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. Like, every group of people has a person they call the Rav, you know? And if you're meant to know who they're talking about. Like, if you're from YU and someone says the Rav, they mean Rav Soloveitchik. You don't ask who's the Rav. Like, if you're from Mekka's a Rav Kook, and they say Harav, they're talking about Rav Kook. You don't say Mizarav, you know? So when the whole Mishnah talks about Rebbe, like our Rebbe, that's Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, lived around the end of the 2nd century CE, and he edited the Mishnah. He had a really good relationship with Antoninus. This is a historical relationship, and the Gemara puts all sorts of conversations into their mouths. Maybe they had this conversation, quite possibly. There were a few others, like Rebbe Akiva and Turnus Rufus, often debate. Now, I don't know whether Rebbe Akiva ever met Turnus Rufus, because Turnus Rufus was a vicious, anti-Semitic Roman general whose life work was to try and kill the Jews, and Rebbe Akiva was on the run for half of this. So I don't suspect that they sat and had, you know, philosophical arguments, but maybe they did, who knows. But the point is that often we see that Rebbe Akiva and Turnus Rufus were debating. It's often quite, like, aggressive, yeah? Here we've got two friends, like the ultimate Jewish and non-Jewish partnership, Rebbe and Antoninus. So look what they said. So Antoninus says to Rebbe, first line number 9. Yichorin niftor atzma min hadin. Surely we can excuse ourselves from responsibility in life. Ketzad, how so? Guf omer, the guf can say, neshama chatat, it's the soul that sins. Shemi yom shepir sham imeni, because from the moment, says the body, that the soul left me, Harini mutl ke'evim domin bekeva. I've been behaving myself lying quietly in the grave. Meaning, I didn't get up to any... The minute that neshama left me, I was like a tzaddik. Totally. No problems. The neshama omerit, and the neshama can say, guf chata, no, it was the body that sinned. Shemi yom shepirashti mimene, because from the second I left the body, harini porachat ba'avir k'tzipor, I've been floating in the air like a bird. Meaning, I've been like on cloud 9. So obviously it's the body that's the problem here. This is just classic people, just, you could do a psychoanalysis of this. You know, it's always the other guy's problem. Amale, so Rebbe answered Antoninus, no. I'll tell you a mashal. Em shalacha mashal, I'll give you a parable. Lema David domi, what is this like? Lemelech basar vadam, let's imagine a king. Shehayelo pardes na'e, he had a beautiful orchard. Vahayelo bechorot na'ot, and he has some beautiful figs that are ready to be picked. The Hoshivu bo shnei shomrim, and he appoints two guardians over the orchard. Echad chiger, one of them is lame. The echad summa, and one of them is blind. Amaloi chiger l'summa, so the lame man says to the blind man, b'chorot na'ot ani roi, b'paradise, I see all these beautiful figs, but I can't get them because I've got no legs. So what happens? He says, ba v'hekivani, I want to go on your back. I'll go on your back, you're blind. V'niviyam la'achlam, and I will direct you, and you can walk to the figs, and I'll pick them, and we'll share them. Rachav chiger al gabi suma, so the lame man went on the shoulders of the blind man. V'hiviyu va'achlam, and they ate all the figs. Liyamim, later on, ba'bala paradise, the owner of the orchard came back. V'amalem, and he said to them, b'chorot na'ot heichan hain, where are my beautiful figs gone? Who ate all the figs? So Amalek he gets to the lame man, says, me, I ate the figs. Klum yeshli raglayim lahalech bayim. Look at me. How could I possibly have eaten the figs? I can't get off the ground. Amalek summa, and the blind person says, klum yeshli yeinayim lirois. What do you mean the figs? How could I even see them? I don't see anything. Ma'asa, what does the king do? Hirkiv chiger algavi summa. He puts the lame man back on top of the blind man. V'dan otam ke'echad. And he judges them both together. Afa Kodesh Baruch Hu, so to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, mevi neshama, he brings back the neshama, v'zorekit beguf, and puts it back in the guf, v'dan otan ke'echad, and he judges them together, and then he brings a posik, sh'ne'emah, yikra el ha'shamayim, God's going to call out to the heavens, ma'al above, v'ala aretz ledin amor, and to the ground, to judge his people. Yikra al ha'shamayim, ma'al zhu neshama, he calls the heaven, the neshama from heaven, v'ala aretz ledin amor, and the body from earth. And he puts them together. So this Gemara says that as a human being, you cannot exist as a human being in a true form as just a neshama. You are not just a neshama. You are a neshama and a guf. Now you might turn around and say, well, the real me is a neshama. To which the Torah, the Gemara is saying, no, the real you is both. You are a composite creature. It's where we started on Sunday. Not like a malach, who is just a neshama. Not like an animal, who is just a goof. You are the total combination of the two. And therefore, if a person's ever going to be accountable for what they did in life, they have to be accountable as a person. And you're only a person when you're both together. And when you die and go to heaven, that's great, but that's just like a holding zone. You can't really be judged in that way then, only when the two are back together. And therefore, it seems pretty clear in the in the Gemara that you need to have literally people coming back to life. And at the time of the Rambam, there was someone called Rav Meir Abu Lafia, who was very shocked at the idea that the Rambam may not subscribe to physical resurrection. And they had pressure on the Rambam, until at the very end of his life, the Rambam wrote something called Ma'amar Tchiyat HaMetim, the essay on resurrection, okay? Meaning he hardly mentions, the Rambam wrote three things in his life, three big things. He wrote lots of other things, but he wrote three big things. The commentary on the Mishnah when he was in his 20s, 30s, which is where the Yud Gimel Ikarim are. The Mishnah Torah, which is when he was in his blessure in his 50s. And then the Morin Avuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed, when he's in his 60s. And he doesn't really mention the resurrection in the Guide to the Perplexed. But the very last thing he writes before he dies is he's pushed and pushed to write this essay saying that he really does believe in Tchiyat HaMetim. Look what he says in number 10. See what you think of this. So the Rambam answers, and I will state, obviously this is translated from the original Arabic, that the resurrection of the dead, which is widely known and recognized among our people, which is accepted by all groups among us, which is mentioned on numerous occasions in the Tfilot, Agadita, and the supplications that were composed by the prophets and the great sages who fill the pages of the Talmud and the Midrashim, refers to the return of the soul to the body after it has departed. Concerning this, there has never been heard any disagreement in our nation, nor does it have any allegorical interpretation other than its literal meaning, nor is it permissible to rely on any individual who believes otherwise. In conclusion, we have been informed prophetically concerning Tchiyat HaMetim, whether on one or on many occasions, and has been mentioned countless times by the sages of Israel, both of earlier and of recent times, and it's become widely publicized in our nation, and there is universal consensus that the human soul will return to the body, and this is the proper approach concerning the resurrection of the dead. Does he believe in it?
Yeah.
Like, either you conclude from this, oh, yeah, I mean, he said it like 15 times. He really, really believes in it. Or you conclude from this,
it's the Masorah. He doesn't really believe in it.
You say anything that many times?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, methinks he doth protest too much.
Yeah.
You know? Meaning, the Rambam has also thrown a spanner in the works. You say spanner, right? They say wrench. It's okay, but you know what I mean. He's made a problem, which is what? In the Morin Avuchim, which he wrote, which is his peak work, and we looked at this, he writes in the introduction, he writes, I'm going to say things in this book that are contradictory and that I don't believe in, just to try and throw you off the scent to see if you're really, really following. Because if you don't, if you can't get it, he says, then you're obviously not the person that this book is made for, and go ahead, you know, go get a nice self-help book and read it and talk about, you know, something fluffy. That's lovely, okay? But if you get the contradictions and understand how, then you're the person I'm writing for. So once the Rambam has told you that I'm going to say things that I don't believe, and if you can't work it out, then you're obviously not bright enough to read my book.
What?
Then you're going to look at it and say, well, I'm never going to know from this point onwards whether this is one of those things or not one of those things. And we talked about this during the course, that in the world of Rambam scholarship, the whole question of esotericism, come on, we've got no room here, is absolutely key. What does esoteric mean?
The hidden meanings.
The hidden meanings, okay? Esotericism, okay? Everyone has to work that word into a sentence sometime between now and next week and make it sound normal. Okay, fine. No, you don't really. Esotericism means it like under the surface. So people said, well, okay, he doesn't really believe it, surely. I mean, if he says it that many times. So how am I going to know? How am I going to know who is the real Rambam? That's always a question. So, for example, the Rambam says, we talked about this earlier in the year, we absolutely can't believe in Aristotle, like ever. And then the Rambam says things that you think, sounds like really like Aristotle. How does that work? And you have to try and work it out. I give you a little example of the exciting sort of following the breadcrumbs on this. Look in top of page 15. There is a Gemara in Brachas that when you walk into a cemetery, a Jewish cemetery, you have to make a brocha. I've seen people not do this very much recently. It used to be back in the old country that the cemetery, the entrance to the cemetery had the brocha on the front of the cemetery, and before you went in the cemetery, you looked up and you said, brocha, brocha, zah, shem, melech, and you made the brocha. It's a brocha you have to make if you haven't been to a cemetery for 30 days. Nowadays, I think people wander into cemeteries, they don't make the brocha. Did you guys know there was a brocha? Right, right. It's and it's not a question of men, women, everybody has to make this brocha. It's a brocha. It's like, you know, fine.
For a Jewish cemetery?
Yeah, Jewish cemetery,
Does that include, like, memorials?
No, there has to be someone buried there.
No, like,
there has to be someone buried there. Okay, number 11. Tan Rabbanan, says the Gemara. Haroi Kivrei Yisrael. Someone who sees Jewish graves. I just mean sees from, like, 100 miles away. Sees. Because he goes there. Omer, they say. Baruch, and the Gemara says Baruch, it means Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Okay, this is the bracha. Asher Yatzar Etchem B'din. You say, God made you, you're talking to the people who have died, God made you in his judgment. V'zan Etchem B'din. And he sustained you while you were alive in his judgment. V'kilkel Etchem B'din. And he provided for you in his judgment. V'asaf Etchem B'din. And he gathered you back. You died in his judgment. Va'atid lehikaimchem bedin, lahakimchem bedin. Excuse me. And in the future, he will raise you up again in his judgment. Baruch ata Hashem mechayei hametim. And then you go into Atah Gibor, which is the second paragraph of the Shemona Esrei. There's a whole brocha. Fine. The beautiful brocha. You go to the people who've died and say, look, you know, everything was done with Hashem's judgment. You were born, you were raised, you were sustained, you died. One of the most important things about going to a Jewish cemetery, by the way, and this brocha underlines it, is that you're the one that gets to walk out afterwards, which is an incredibly empowering reality. That there are hundreds of people and they can't walk out, and you can walk out. And the question is, what are you going to do with that incredible opportunity that they're not able to do? So that's actually a very important thing this bracha is trying. Good, very nice, beautiful, hashkafa, bracha, Ramban. In the Mishnah Torah, which is meant to be not controversial, just like halachas and for all Jews, not meant to be like esoteric and like under philosophical. Here is Hipsek, number 12. Haro'ek Kivrei Yisrael. This is one of 30,000-40,000 Piskei Halacha in the Mishnah Torah. Haroi Kivrei Yisrael, someone who sees a Jewish grave, Mavarech makes a bracha. Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Asher Yatzar Etchem B'din. Okay, good. Like the Gemara. V'dan Etchem B'din. V'kilkel Etchem B'din. V'heimit Etchem B'din. And he killed you, he caused you to die in his judgment. V'hu Atid Lahakim Etchem B'din. And he will raise you up in din. L'chai Olam Haba. To life in the world to come. Baruch Atah Hashem, Mechayei Meitim. What does that mean? L'chai Olam Haba. That wasn't in the Gemara. L'chai Olam Haba. Yes. I mean, he has a slightly different Girus, unless you say he was in his Girus in the Gemara, which will be interesting to try and work out if he had a slightly different Girus in the Gemara. But it doesn't. It sounds like he's explaining what the bracha is. The correct bracha is L'chai Olam Haba. Yeah.
In other words, I mean, like, that could be technically true without any Tehiyas and Mason, like, soul coming back to life.
Right, what does the Rambam mean by Olam Haba? We saw this very clearly. What is Olam Haba for the Rambam? Yes, the soul world. It's the soul world. This bracha is all about the soul world. You're alive today in the soul world. So, you believe in Tehiyas and Mason, or do you not believe in Tehiyas and Mason? What do you mean by Tehiyas and Mason? So, that's an interesting question. And number 13, yeah.
I actually kind of disagree that suggests that he doesn't believe it, because he's said both, L'chai ha'olam haba, baruch atah Hashem, l'chai ha'metim. If he's rewording it there, but then finishing it, l'chai ha'metim.
But what does l'chai ha'metim mean? You're assuming l'chai ha'metim means...
Doesn't mean ha'olam haba, but then...
No, but l'chai ha'metim, who gives life to the dead? L'chai ha'metim, who gives life to the dead? Where? It's not clear. It's not clear.
But we don't know that Olam Haba is not physical.
No, we don't. We just had a whole shiur on Monday, saying according to the Kabbalists, Olam Haba is physical. Olam Haba is the ultimate connection of back to Gan Eden, back to Adam and Chavar, and we're physical and spiritual, and it's blah, 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 blah. The Maimonides doesn't believe that. But Olam Haba might be physical, and when the dead come back to life, that is a physical thing, no? Now, let's go on a little bit. Number 13, says the Rambam, in this piece that he wrote, I explain that we find men concerned only with the resurrection. Meaning, why have I downplayed this in the past? He says, because people are, like, obsessed with the resurrection. Asking if the dead will rise naked, or in their garments, or other such problems. And there are people really are very interested in this. Because it's almost like an unhealthy obsession with stuff that is like, you'll never get an answer to. I've got a whole book at home called When Mashiach Comes. It's been out of print for about 40 years. And it was old when I bought it. And it's like a whole bunch of these questions. If you're married to three people in life, and after Tchias Amesim, who are you going to be married to? You know, are you going to come back as a baby? Are you going to come back as an old person? Are you going to come back like as you were like 3 seconds before you died? Like, nobody really wants that, okay? Are you going to come back as some kind of fit, healthy 19-year-old all over again? And like, if so, like what? And the Rambam says, like, it really irritates me when people are getting into these questions, because it's just a distraction. That, by the way, is one of the reasons why I think, this is my sort of spin on this, a lot of people are really into the EBGB stuff. Because it means they don't have to actually think about the really important stuff, like, am I helping other people enough? Am I speaking Lashon Hara? Am I... Yeah, do you know how much time... This is, are you going to get me on one of my little rants now? Do you know how much time that 18-year-old seminary girls spend working on their religious growth in not listening to non-Jewish music? Like, it's like an investment of so much... You're like, Mesiris Nefesh, and energy, and energy, and energy, and energy. And in my cynical moments, which happen every now and then, I think to myself, well, it's really great doing this, because it stops you from having to think about the real questions, which are, am I nasty, and speak Lashon Hara, and do I keep Shabbos properly, and am I, like, because you can just focus on non-Jewish music. And of course, there are halachas that you're not meant to listen to stuff which is vulgar and inappropriate. Of course there are. But like 15 minutes after they leave Sem, they're back listening to non-Jewish music again, okay? And therefore the whole year says, well, that was my bubble, and I'm not in that now. Like, what a shame you didn't spend more time thinking about, like, you know, learning what the hithel was and not the huffel. You know, it would have been more useful than that, okay? But so, and again, don't get me wrong, there are kind of music that there really are halachic problems with, but not, like, a lot of the stuff. So the point here is that the Rambam is expressing a similar frustration. People are into all this, but the world to come is entirely overlooked. People aren't thinking of the soul world. I therefore announce very clearly that the resurrection is a fundamental of the Torah of Moses our master, but it's not the ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal is life in the world to come. I engaged in this long discussion so that I dispel the serious skepticism that contends that the Torah knows of no reward, which is not in this world, and that it makes no mention of reward or punishment in the afterlife. Meaning, says the Rambam, I think that people don't realize that when they're in a Shoma, that is the ultimate place. When they can connect with God. All they're bothered about is coming back to life and being, you know, eating dinner again. Says that they've missed the point. And by the way, the Rambam clearly said that after Tchiyat Tamesim, even though he says people will physically come back to life, if you believe him, they'll die again. They're going to die again because no one lives forever. So what's the point of them coming back to life? The answer is, okay, you get another chance to do some more mitzvahs. The Rambam will say, that's great. How long do you need? I don't know. How long would you take? If you offered all the dead people, you know, you can come back to life for a temporary period. What's worth it? A year? I think people will take a year, a month, a week, a day. I think people will take 10 minutes, honestly. You know, you can do a lot of mitzvahs in 10 minutes. So the Rambam says it doesn't have to last forever. The Ramban, Nachmanides, who we know has a different view, later on in number 15, he says like this. Look, I'm going to explain the Rambam. Definitely, he was a big fan of the Rambam. He calls the Rambam the Rav. He's another one. Like, for the Ramban, who is the Rav? The answer is, it's Maimonides. The Hine, number 15. Arichut harav, zal. The reason the Rav, Maimonides, goes on at such length, b'harboisa dvarim lahachriya shibnei olam haba einam guf, and he focuses all the time on the soul world, the ultimate world is the soul world. L'shnei nyanim, there are a few reasons for this. Ki hu yodea, he knows full well, she'anshei kabbalatenu, our people, the mystics, kabbalatenu, with our Kabbalah, whether he's using the word Kabbalah, in the way I would Kabbalah, probably not. But he's using, we have a mystical tradition. Ya'aminu, we believe, she'ein achrei hatchiyat mita. There is no death after the resurrection. It's forever. It's back to Gan Eden. Al pim ma shedarshu b'bala hamavish lenetzach. Because we have this posik. This is a posik people say when they leave a cemetery. That God will take away all death. Va'amarun, it says, meisim sha'asel ha'kosh baruch l'ach yoshuv ein l'chuzim la'afram. That the Mason will one day come back to life and they will not go back to the dust. ולזה הדעת, and according to this view, בני העולם הבא אחרי תחייה יחיו בעולם. We believe that after the Tzchiyat HaMetim, people will live forever. בעולם ההוא, in this world, בגופותם, in their bodies. Now, yet your body might come back like Adam Arishan body, you know, like shining, and you're some kind of like angel body kind of thing. Yeah? We talked last time about angel bodies and whether angels have bodies. But it's a body. V'harav zal, but Maimonides, mevatel ze hadat b'kol yichalto. He goes against this view with all the energy he has. And that's why Chalku Alav, people have disagreed with him, Rabbim, so many people, Mechachmei Adorot, from the previous generations, Ha'elu, Ala Kavanah Hazod Kemo She'imsa B'divreihem. He's writing this in the 1230s, 1240s. There was an enormous Maimonidean controversy. Okay? In the 30, 40, 50, 60 years after the Rambam died, it was massive. It's like it was the Hashkofa like issue everybody was talking about. Yeah, no one was asking, do you have a smartphone? They were saying, like, what do you think about the Rambam? It was like the big thing. It was all very fraught, and there were allegations that people were getting the Rambam's books burnt and this and that. If you're interested, there's a whole course that is taught in Yeshiva University on the Maimonidean controversies. And the Ramban's explaining one of the big issues is, does he believe in this? Now, okay, so it sounds from the Ramban that there are lots of sources for this. So what is the Rambam doing? You're left with this sense maybe that, I don't know, the Rambam's kind of making stuff fit because that's his Aristotelian. But actually, no. Let me give you something else now, which is really interesting. Look at number 16. Remember the Gemara I told you about the blind guy and the lame guy and the Gemara Agadita. The Agadita in the Gemara says God puts them both together and judges them both. Well, look at the version of that midrash in Vayikra Rabbah. Vayikra Rabbah is a midrash. It's a collection of midrashim. Look what it says. Tani Rabbi Yishmael. It's the same idea. Moshel Lemelech. There's a parable of a king. Shehayalo Pardes, who had an orchard. V'hayalo b'chorot naot, and he had beautiful figs. V'hoshiv boi melech shomrim, and he put two watches on it. Echad chige ve'echad suma. Okay, one blind and one lame. Fine. And then I've missed out all the rest of the story, because it's the same story. The blind man, the lame man, they go on each other. Obviously, the blind man is the body, and the lame man is the soul, and they fit together. Fine, good. But look at this ending. Different plot twist. Plot twist in Vayikra Rabbah. Tani Rebbe Chia, La'atid Laboy, in the future, Hanefesh v'haguf ondim b'din. The Nefesh and the Guf will stand next to Hashem in din. Ma Kodesh Baruch Hu Oise, what will God do? Maniach haguf, he'll say to the body, we don't need you. Thank you very much, you're not relevant. Umadayin ima neshama, and he'll do a din on the neshama. V'hi omerit lefanav, and the neshama will say to God, Ribon ha'olamim, Lord. Shaninu ka'achat chatanu. We both sin together. We both sin together. In this version of the Midrash, the Neshama says, why are you blaming me? It's both of us. Honestly, we fess up. It's both of us. We did it. Mitni ma'at amaniach et aguf. Why are you leaving him, the guf, umadayini me, and you're only judging me? Amalah haguf. Amalah, he said, God says to the Neshama, haguf? Haguf min hatachtoinim hu. The guf is an animal. What do you want from the goof? It's from a place where people behave like behemoths. That's what the goof is. Aval ata, but you, min ha'alyoinim, you're from heaven. But makam she'ein choytin, lefanai, and there were no one sins. Lefikach ani maniach es haguf, therefore I'm not bothered about him, umadayinim cha, and I'm not bothered about you. Interesting. Different ending to the same midrash. This ending is beautiful for the Rambam. Perfect for the Rambam. The Rambam's going to say, listen, mate, it's not me you've got a problem with. It's the fact that there are different voices in Chazal. There's a voice in Chazal that says that ultimately it's the Guf and the Neshama together. And there's a voice in Chazal that says at the end of the day, it's all about Olam Haba in the soul world. Yeah, don't get upset with me and call me an Aristotelian. The Chazal don't always speak with the same voice. There are different traditions on these issues. So the Rambam actually has some pretty good solid backing for his position, and he had a lot of supporters in this controversy, and people were kind of going back and forth on this issue. This is still a bit of an issue today. To what extent, hashkafically, are we meant to be Kabbalists, or are we meant to be rationalists? Yeah? Pretty much everybody in this room, if they had input from anyone from the yeshiva world, anyone from the Hasidic world, from Chabad, almost all the Hashkofa that you've ever been taught is Kabbalistic, ultimately. On the other hand, if you had educational background from the modern Orthodox world, from maybe the Rav Hirsch world, the Torah Derech Eretz, the Hashkofa that you've got is not Kabbalistic. It's a rationalistic Hashkofa. It's a different Hashkofa. Because both of those voices were speaking through Chazal all the way through. And again, you feel that, wow, we've got these Hashkafic issues today. They've always been there. They just got called different things at different times. Okay? So at the end of the day, I think what we've got here is a really good example of how different Hashkafas have got different bases, and they're kind of not necessarily going to agree with each other. Zoe?
I feel like in Judaism, often we're afraid to talk about this subject, or it's not brought up very clearly.
Okay, which subject? Tikkat HaMeitim?
Yeah. Like, it's like, especially as kids, if you're a kid growing up, like, it's really not...
And who wants to talk about death? No one wants to talk about death.
Well, I think, like, there's an important place for...
No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
I don't know,
old people like to talk about death. They talk about death all the time. Yeah. Okay.
I just wonder if, because of this controversy...
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's... You know something? I don't know whether the syllabus as to how we teach people... is really that thought through.
Okay.
I have a suspicion after being in education for 30 years that people teach people what they got taught. Yeah? Well, like people stand up and say the same Dvar Torah on the parasha that you heard 100 times because, yeah, they heard that Dvar Torah, they say it again. Where do people learn their Midrashim? They learn them in Gan, in first grade, in second grade. Who teaches? The people teach them the Midrashim that they were taught. Yeah? And let me do a blind test on you. Blind test. Bilam. Okay? Bilam. Parshas Bilam this week. Parshas Balak, right? So Bilam, he was a non-Jewish what? Was he a prophet? Was he not a prophet? Is there any Jewish voice on the fact that whether Bilam was a prophet or wasn't a prophet?
He was a magician.
Okay, he was a magician.
I thought he was a prophet.
You were told he was a prophet.
Yeah.
Right. Because the Midrash says, Lo kam bi Yisrael kamoshe od, there's never going to be another one like Moshe in Israel, in the Jewish people. But the non-Jewish people, they had a Moshe potential equivalent. And they had Bilam. And they can't turn around and say, oh, if we'd have had Moshe, then we would have been as good as you. Because you did, look, you had Bilam, and you didn't take advantage of it. Okay, that is a very well-taught Midrash. Yeah? But the Rambam says, utter, complete bunkum. It's completely not, you don't know what bunkum is. It's not, it's like nonsense. Not true. How can Bilam be a prophet? Come on. In order to become a Navi, you have to go through Navi school. You have to become a Baal Midas. You have to become someone who's completely in control of themselves. You have to be the most unbelievable Talmid Chacham in Torah Shebaal Peh, Torah Shebiktav. You have to be an incredibly, unbelievably impressive person. And then you can start thinking about being a Navi. Bilam? Rambam's going to say, I don't follow that Medrash, that Bilam was a Moshe-like equivalent. I follow the Medrash that says that Bilam slept with his donkey. Yeah, Bilam and the donkey, they were big mates. Yeah, they don't teach that one to the kindergarten kids. Because what is it saying? Do you know what Bilam was? He was Mrs. Donkey or Mr. Donkey, either way. He was a donkey. He was just a donkey. And God can take a donkey's mouth and go, wah, 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 and make a donkey speak. And God can take Bilam's mouth and make it go, wah, 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 and he's just a donkey. A prophet? Are you joking? The guy is the biggest lowlife in town. Two very different messages. And yet the people always teach the message that they were taught, and therefore you get this perpetuate. Do you know what percentage of Midrashim we learn? I mean, like 1%, 2%? I don't even do this myself, but I know some people who do. Work through the Midrashim, and you suddenly start seeing things going, whoa, like it's completely the opposite of what I've always thought about this. And then you start to see a whole new side of things. We should really do that a lot. We should like a moratorium. Someone should stand up and say, right, everything that people teach now, you can't teach any of that anymore. You all have to come up with a new syllabus for everything. I mean, maybe some basics, you know? Like, you know, don't alphabet. Kill people. Alphabet, yeah, maybe. Okay? But yeah, it's a good question. Who comes up with the syllabus? It needs a lot of thought to do it. And then when some people come out with a different kind of perspective, you say, well, I don't know, that sounds a bit weird. Like, what are they? Oh, they must be modern people. They're obviously, you know, what's that mean? Okay, yes.
Rabbis or commentators justify the Sefirah of 18 kind of like wall acknowledging that it doesn't come up so much in the Torah itself.
Okay, well, neither does Olam Haba.
It's the same question,
but that takes us way into different territory, which we can talk about, but not right now. Okay? Okay, let's leave it there because I need to run. We will finish this topic tomorrow. We will talk about Gilgulim. We will talk a bit, do an overview, and we'll have some questions. Think of some good questions for tomorrow, guys. Okay? Tomorrow's your chance.